I was driving over here, and I was listening to the tune came on The Blessing. You guys might remember that during the middle of COVID, and the song The Blessing comes out. And it hit me that as what we're trying to do here today, a lot of us might be looking at this thing, we don't have that many more years. Let's just ride it out. Let's not worry about fighting. Let's not worry about trying to preserve our nation's values and history and the faith that that's the foundation of our country. But is that what God told Aaron to do and his sons? He said, no, you were to give this blessing to the children of Israel. May the Lord bless you, keep you, may he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he turn his face toward you and give you peace. And I feel like that's so, a lot of us out here, you could easily just say, I've only got a few years left. No, actually, I shouldn't say that. You might actually, but, the reality of it is I think that God's called us to make a difference long term and to impact the future of this nation. Frankly, impact the future of the world. Back in, it was about 20 years ago, I was sitting in a conference, and they were lawyers. I was in Chicago, and it was back in the day when, you didn't have laptops. And so we went down into the business office, and I'm sitting down, and I'm working away and on a document, and there's another lawyer, and he's from England, and he was at the conference. And this lawyer had been defending a man who had been beaten up by a group of homosexuals because he was out protesting something in relation to that. This man was actually a pastor who had been beaten up. And guess who got arrested? This man who got beaten up, not those who beat him up. And, he told me, he said, Bob, America is our last hope. It's the last hope for the world. Now, look, as Christians, America itself is not the last hope. But let's just think about where we do stand. God blessed us, right? I mean, and our forefathers, frankly, gave us an Aaronic blessing ourselves that we've enjoyed. And so many of us that grew up in the 70s and remember what it means to actually have learned about how God influenced our nation. And, there's no question about the Pledge of Allegiance and our motto, "In God We Trust." God was a foundation of it. And so, folks, I want to tell you that it's time for all of us to step up. We have to stand up because we need to give a blessing to our children. And if you're not willing to get out and vote, that's like the talent that God gives us. The talent in the Bible, the parable of the talent, you're given the right to at least vote. And if you don't vote, what happened in the parable of the talents to the one man who said, "I'm going to bury my talent"? Well, God forbid that be you. You need to get out and vote. Now, why am I here? I'm a constitutional law attorney. I don't make a living doing this, but we have a business practice. But, in the constitutional law arena, every time we get in front of a judge, it matters. It matters who the judge is. It matters who appointed the judge. And, I've got to tell you that right now we're in the middle of facing gaslighting like never before. Think about the Hunter Biden laptop. Is it, last election, this time of year, last election, the Hunter Biden laptop comes out, and it shows all of this, frankly, criminal activity. But the media wants to come out and gaslight us and say, no, that's not true. It's fake. And so we see this gaslighting happening everywhere. Now, I bring up the Hunter Biden laptop because we're in the middle of defending one of the gentlemen, a key gentleman who exposed the laptop, and he's being sued by Hunter Biden right now. And so, you know, frankly, it's kind of tough. A lot of people are afraid to even work on the case with me. And so we get in front of a judge. Now, the case gets assigned to a judge who had just been appointed by Joe Biden. Surprise. Not only that, but this judge donated to Joe Biden's campaign in 2020. And you think, did anybody have a question like, do you think that's reasonable that he would be deciding this judge who donated to this man? Oh, on top of it all, the Hunter Biden laptop has everything to do with what then was the impeachment information that we were getting out, that I shouldn't say, that my client was getting out. Congress was using it, was using the data my client put. It's called MarcoPolo.org. MarcoPolo501c3.org, if you ever want to go look them up. Amazing information. 600-page dossier, investigative research to show millions of dollars that are being taken in by this crime family, frankly. And so the information is trying to get out there to the public. Congress is referencing my client and his information. And so I had a chance to talk to some of the folks in Congress. We got a declaration from one of the congressional people that's saying that this case has a direct impact on the impeachment of Joe Biden. Now, wouldn't you think that a judge who was appointed by Joe Biden 3 months earlier and had just donated to Joe Biden would be able to just say, I need to recuse myself? You would think, right? But no. So we have to file a motion. So then guess who we get in front of next, because it goes in front of a different judge? We get in front of another judge who was just appointed by Joe Biden 3 months earlier, and her husband donated to Joe Biden. Folks, judges are incredibly important for the fate, frankly, of our nation and the truth and information that's going to get out to us. By example, in Trump got elected in 2016. 2016, in December, I was going in front of the Ninth Circuit to argue a case. I was in front of, initially, at the district court in Los Angeles, in front of an Obama appointee. And it was about a preacher out in Hemet who had been arrested for reading the Bible out loud. Now, maybe a little obnoxious to some people, I get it, but we live in a country that still has the principle of free speech. And, you know, it's not necessarily the way I'd spread the gospel, but it's okay. He did it that way. That's what he did. But he gets arrested completely unlawfully. And so we file this lawsuit in front of this district court judge. I'm sitting there arguing this case. I'm begging the judge to read, to watch the video. Literally just completely ignored in federal court. I knew we're losing at that point in time. They didn't like what our client was saying. Didn't like what our client was reading from. He wasn't even preaching. All he was doing was reading the Bible out loud. So we have to appeal. And, you know, I'm expecting we're getting to the Ninth Circuit. We're going to lose because we're in the Ninth Circuit, right? This is 2016, and at this point in time, there's one judge in the Ninth Circuit that has any, in my view, any real credibility as being intellectually honest. And so as we get to the Ninth Circuit, and now Trump gets elected in November, and I go in to argue this case. And there was like this sea change. The entire demeanor of the court was different. I'm in front of three judges. Guess what? They argued the case for me. I sat back and I was astonished. I literally was like, what is going on here? And these three judges were arguing my case, and we won, like we should have. But I was so shocked about that. Just before that, you know, I'll give you another scenario why elections are so important, not just because of judges, but we were representing the Chino Valley Unified School District. Chuna Valley Unified School District, they came and they had been sued in the district court by Freedom From Religion Foundation, were asked to come defend the school district by taking it up on appeal to the Ninth Circuit. And I told the school district, I said, okay, listen, here's how it's gonna play out. We're gonna lose. We're gonna go on appeal. We're gonna get in front of three judges. We're gonna lose. And this is totally expected. And then after that, we're gonna file what's called an en banc petition, which means we're gonna ask for the Ninth Circuit to appoint 11 judges to review the entirety of the case. And then at that point in time, hopefully we'll get the one judge, Judge O'Scanlan, who will write when the entire Ninth Circuit votes and says, we're gonna deny review. If we can get this one judge to write this dissenting opinion that says why the school district should win. And by the way, it was about whether or not they could have invocations at school board meetings. A prayer in the beginning of a school board meeting, right? It happened since the beginning of our country. And so I know this is what's gonna happen. We're in the Ninth Circuit, we're gonna lose. And let's try if we can just get this one judge. And so it goes just like I said. And we file our en banc petition. And Trump had just been elected as well. What ends up happening? Not only did we get Judge O'Scanlan to rule in our favor, but you know how I said like the entire mood changed in the Ninth Circuit? It's like all of a sudden the Constitution matters again. We had eight judges sign on to a dissenting opinion saying, yeah. So eight judges say, you know what? The three-judge panel was wrong. We should have appointed 11 judges to reverse this case. Because this case has to do with called it's the constitutional, the establishment clause, you know, the whole called separation of church and state. And what's crazy, so I get these eight judges, and I'm thinking, this is just fantastic. But what had happened was, just before, there was this election, and we lost a three-seat majority on the school board. At the same time, I've got lawyers from all over the country, seriously, calling me. Everybody wants a piece of this case because they know that the U.S. Supreme Court will likely take this case up, and it will be the case that reverses the Establishment Clause, the poor analysis that's given to the Establishment Clause to bring it back to what it was originally intended. And that is not that we can't have invocations at school board meetings. Rather, that it's perfectly legitimate for God to be recognized and reverenced by official ceremonies, by city meetings, by government meetings, by school meetings. What ends up happening is this new three-judge majority orders me, because I'm their lawyer and I gotta take it from them, they tell me, you have to dismiss this case. You have to dismiss our appeal, I should say. And you have to pay Freedom From Religion Foundation $300,000+. Now, it came out of the school district, but that's what they said. Why? Because we lost one election. And we finally have the judges, we've got the case that's gonna reverse 30 years of really, really bad precedent. And I was personally disappointed because, oh gosh, that was our case. Thankfully, a couple years later, a friend of mine out of Texas took a case up, and they took it in reverse. That's the Coach Kennedy case, the coach that prayed with his team. So that was pretty awesome. But a few years later, but imagine, had we kept a majority on that school board, what a difference that would have made. And so presently, as it sits right now, it is still illegal within the entire Ninth Circuit, which means California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Hawaii, Arizona, Nevada. It is illegal for invocations to be take place at school board meetings. So we're gonna be working on that, Lord willing, after this next election. But, and hopefully we're gonna go back in and be able to reverse that. But it's gonna depend on the election. It's gonna depend on who's in charge of the school board. Down in Temecula, we're defending the Temecula Unified School District. And folks, this is us right here. Please listen to this. We had a three-seat majority in the Temecula Valley Unified School District for folks who care about their kids, frankly, who care about their kids and this new ideology that's coming out to try to rape your children's minds. You're going to be hearing about that from Karen. Karen's going to be talking about you. Talking about you, no, not you. Talking to you about this issue. Now, what's happening in Temecula is they got sued. The three-seat majority on the school board asked us to defend the school district. We did. We stepped in. We're defending them. We win at the Superior Court that says, you know what? It is perfectly constitutional for the school district to require that parents be notified if their children are deciding we want to be transgender or they want to go by a different pronoun, et cetera, et cetera. Well, since that lawsuit came and we're defending and we're winning, we're up on appeal now. The other side filed an appeal, which, by the way, the plaintiffs who brought that lawsuit, it's an organization called Public Counsel. Just so you know, the judge in the Hunter Biden laptop case I just told you about, yeah, he was the executive director over that Public Counsel. Oh yeah, and the judge who decided on whether or not this first judge should have been recused and told he couldn't handle the case, she also was the head of Public Counsel as well. It's quite sickening. But here we are. So now we're in Temecula, and we've got this policy that this school board stands up and says we're gonna fight, we're gonna battle, we're gonna protect our kids. One of the school board's members lost her job because she was in a public school. She frankly was able to get another job, but she lost her job because of her position and stance. The other school board member, Joseph Komrosky, who was a professor at Mount San Antonio College. What happened to him? He got all sorts of folks trying to attack him and try to eliminate his tenure as a professor there, trying to get him fired. He didn't, thankfully. But then they came and they voted, and there was a recall election, and they recalled him. Theoretically, there's a real question about our votes, and we'll be talking about that in a minute. Then the other gentleman who was on our three-seat majority, he went, and what ends up happening to him? He's got his own business up in Orange County, and it's a machine fabrication business, sell it, work with unions. The unions came and put him out of business somehow. He had to move and leave the state. So now we're sitting in a situation down in Temecula where there are the two liberals that are beholden to the California Teachers Association, which is I think the single greatest mafia in our state. And then one courageous gal who's she's not up for re-election, but she's standing there, and she's right now the only thing holding back the school district from, you know, really just caving into to all of this leftist agenda. You know what? Sorry. This time, I'm trying to see. I don't know how much time I have left because I thought it was a countdown. So I just started over. Okay. All right. So here's where we're at. You got to get out and do something about this, because we can win like we've won, and we've got a judge telling us it's constitutional, and you're. But then again, if we don't have a majority, if we don't have people who care about their kids, you know, living their lives out as what God called them to be, male or female, then we're going to be forced to lose this case. And you know, it's one of those, it's ours to lose. What's it going to take? It's going to take us getting out there. It's going to take people getting out to vote. It's going to take you all to get to your friends in Temecula and say, vote, 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 vote. It's incredibly important. You know, let me see. I should get to my PowerPoint. Abraham Lincoln, Who is it that said you knew him out there? Abraham Lincoln, when he came up, there was this case, the Dred Scott decision. Horrible. Basically said, if you're black, you're three-fifths of a person, you can't vote, you can't even bring a lawsuit in federal court. And this was awful. Now consider this. This is even after we had the Declaration of Independence at that time. The Declaration of Independence said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What good is a piece of paper if we, the people, aren't willing to do something about it, to try to preserve and protect what that declaration actually means? Well, Abraham Lincoln's running, and he's standing on a position of you know, you have the South at the time, and what happened down in the South? The Southern Democrats. Oh, sorry guys, but that's what it was. They were the Southern Democrats. And they did not want the slaves. They did not want the elimination of slavery. They wanted to continue the ability to own people. They didn't want them to be able to vote. Gaslighting. What do you think? I was about a month ago. Nancy, full of Pelosi, she was on talking on TV. I think it was like MSNBC. And so she's giving this interview. And so she brings up Abraham Lincoln and how our nation at the time was in this place of great division. And it's time for us to step up again to bring our nation back together. That's gaslighting. You are the one who wanted to keep these people enslaved, and you still want to keep them enslaved. It's ridiculous. Abraham Lincoln gives us this quote. He says, we the people are the righteous masters of both Congresses and courts. Now, by the way, this is when he's running for president. We the people are the righteous masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert it. Little did he know that the word pervert would mean something wholly different now. To effect our main object, we have to employ auxiliary means. We must hold conventions, adopt platforms, select candidates, and carry elections. That's what is required of us. That's what he looked at and said, we have to stand up. And look what he did. You know, frankly, that was a Red Sea moment, so to speak. And, you know, folks, we've seen those Red Sea moments in the past, and Martin Luther King recognized this. And he comes to the church and says, it's time, we have to get engaged. Martin Luther King, what does he say? Martin Luther King said in 1963, he said, the church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Think about that. An irrelevant social club. Well, guess what we were in 2020? According to Gavin Newsom, we were just going to be churches. You had to close down. You're going to be allowed to reopen when the sporting events reopen. When the Coliseum well, it's not the Coliseum anymore now, but whatever you call it now. You know, you're not going to be open until the big stadium's open. Why? Because you're just an irrelevant social club. So what happened then? You know, that was a time when good and evil was so incredibly, you know, it seems like it was so long ago, but it was just, 3 years ago? Three and a half. And I'm sitting here on the phone call with Pastor Jack basically trying to counsel hundreds of pastors that were on this phone call about what are we going to do? How are we ever going to get the church back open? And this was April of 2020. And Jack says, you know what, Bob, what if we all opened at the same time? And, you know, just completely, it's an act of civil disobedience. But what if we just all open at the same time? And I was stupidly said, well, no, now I look back, I'm glad I said it, but kind of stupidly at the time, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Why don't we do that? And you know, so we ended up writing the Declaration of Essentiality. We got 1,800 pastors around the state of California to sign this declaration. And then we publicize it. We're saying churches are reopening on May 31st, the day of Pentecost. Now, what happened? Boy, the media went crazy. How horrible and hateful you are. How could you do this? And I was on CNN and had an opportunity to talk to their anchor and explain, you know, there's more people dying of suicide right now than are dying of COVID? And all of the horrors of abused children and battered wives being stuck in their houses because you can't leave. And there's so many horrors. And she kind of, her eyes started opening. She said, wow, it was like the, by the end of the interview, it was a total different thing. And then she says, well, what happens if Governor Newsom says no? I said, we're not asking for permission. It's time for the church to open. So COVID was this incredible time. You know, the church stood up. The church is what made the difference. We could probably still be closed today if it wasn't for courageous pastors like John and so many others that said, we're reopening. We're not going to sit back and just stay closed. And so churches reopened. We had baptisms. I know with Pastor Jack, he's had thousands of baptisms and churches we represent up north and down south here. Just thousands of people have come to the Lord in this time. Why? Because the church spoke up, took a stand, and good and evil became incredibly apparent. Incredibly apparent. The church has got to take a stand, and we got to take a stand now. We go back in time, we can look at the Azusa Street revivals in the 1900s. We can go to the Jesus Revolution that we had here, that this church is birthed out of. The thing about the Maranatha Christian music and so many incredible things that have happened. And so, you know, here we are now. You know, we've had the COVID revival. I start using that, okay? I like it. We had the COVID revival. Seriously, it's been an amazing time. Incredibly frustrating and tiring, but amazing. We're going to have to do this again in 2024. We're going to have to step up as the church. I don't want to have to go to public council and say, will you guys settle with us because the Temecula Valley School District no longer cares about their children? I don't want to go into our election case where we're en banc again in the Ninth Circuit, where we've gone in front of the court. I don't want to have to go and like just turn my tail and say, we're going to forget it. We're losing. We've got a case there, by the way. Consider this. We point out that there's 1.8 million people or million registered to vote more than are actually allowed to vote. So basically, 1.8 million people on our California voter rolls that are not eligible to vote. They could be dead, they could be, you know, they could not be citizens, they could have moved, they could be living in another state, all sorts of things. Just here in Riverside County, the registrar of voters came forward just a couple weeks ago, and in his PowerPoint slide, he said they looked at 1.34 million registered voters in Riverside County. But guess what? How many, they hired Experian because they're supposed to clean the voter rolls and they're supposed to do this regularly. What they came back, they only got 1.07 match. That means close to 300,000 registered to vote in Riverside County that are not allowed to vote. So ballots are being shipped out and there's going to be close to 300,000 that maybe they're dead, maybe they've moved, all sorts of things, but where are those ballots going to go? We've got to be thinking about this. The only way that we're going to, as a church, to make a big difference, and that is for us to overwhelm the vote. We have to get out, and we can make a difference. In 2020, here's some statistics. More than 7,700 voters have two votes credited to their voting histories. That means they voted twice. Now, did that person actually vote twice, or did someone else vote and use their name and get in? We don't know. 124,000 more votes counted. This is incredible. The Secretary of State, what happens after the election? Every county sends their votes to the Secretary of State and says, here's our number. And then the Secretary of State publishes and certifies and says, okay, here's the official results. Somehow, the Secretary of State winds up with 124,000 more votes than who actually voted during the election. That was 2020. And then you see this down here that there's, you know, as I said, 1.834 million people on our voter rolls, or at least registrants, that in California that are going to be mail ballots that are not even eligible to vote. But let me talk. Let me give you some encouraging words, and I better hurry because they didn't really start the clock over for me. Okay, listen to this. 31% of California adults attend a religious service once a week. Okay? This was done by the Pew Research Study, 31%. Okay, California registered voters, there's about 22 million. Just assume that 31, and I think this is a conservative estimate, that of those 22 million people, 31% of them go to church once a week. Now, by the way, they might go, it might not be a Christian church, it might be Mormon, it might be, it could even be some Hindu or something else like that. But by and large, it's about 30% say that they're Christians in California. So 31% attend a religious service once a week. So come back to this. If you take 31% of those 22 million people, that winds up 6.8 million people. In March of 2024, California, we only had a total of 7,500,000 people vote. So imagine what kind of an impact you could have. How much of an impact your one vote, your family's vote, your church's vote. And one of the things I'm really glad to see that there's a lot of hands here, people who don't come to this church, is so that you can take this information back to your church. Consider this. Consider what churches can do. This is amazing, and Pastor John talked about this. You have to speak on the issues and go to your pastors and talk to them about speaking on the issues, on the moral and social issues. They have every right to do it. Whether the secular world wants to call it politics or not, it's not politics. The Bible speaks on everything from the environment to taxes to welfare to immigration, all sorts of things. And pastors need to be speaking about these things. And, you know, I'm honored to be behind a pulpit that does that. You can harvest the hearts and then gather their ballots. Have them come to church and say, look, even this evening, this night, or Sunday mornings, we'll take your ballots. Come on in. You don't even have to tell them how to vote. You can just say, just bring your ballots. And you can have information about party platforms. You can register people to vote here at church, at your church. You can invite candidates and elected officials to speak. You can host a voter forum. This is what I love. You know, I did this one time years ago, and we had this forum, and I can't remember what politician it was, but it was, you know, some statewide politician, and we invited both to show up to this event. Well, guess what? Who showed up? Only the one that we liked. The other one, they're not going to show up. You can invite politicians here to church, and as long as you invite them both to come give, so, you know, here, give me 5 minutes. You know, the bad ones aren't going to show up, and if they do show up, they're going to, maybe they'll know the Lord. Maybe they'll come to Jesus. You never know. Certainly, you can talk about ideological platforms. You can talk about abortion. You can talk about life. Absolutely. You have to do that. And just like John, I've heard him do that so many times. Praise the Lord for that. And your pastors need to be doing the same. Leaders, you know, the one thing that that you're not supposed to do as a church is to endorse a candidate. But you know what? We think the Johnson Amendment that this comes from is unconstitutional. One day we're going to fight it. One day we're going to be able to challenge it legally. And that's going to be reversed at some point in time, in my view. One of the important things you can also do, churches, you got to get out, and you got the opportunity to come and with You can volunteer. You can go. There's a group called Election Integrity Project of California, who we represent. It's a nonpartisan group. And they go out and they train voters. They train people to engage, to go observe elections. And with that information, we can then take that back and try to get laws reversed. We can bring legal challenges when we need to. But this is something that you can do as a citizen. You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to be a politician. Just they'll train you on election day to be able to go do that. This brings me to the conclusion. I'm probably a little over my time. I just have to encourage you, I can't encourage you more, that as a lawyer who stands in court in front of these judges, I cannot impress upon you more how important it is that you vote, that we have a president, a governor, who appoint intellectually honest people, not politically motivated judges, but intellectually honest people. Because if we're going to have any shot at making a difference in defending the Constitution, it's going to require that you vote, that we get the right people in place. China has a constitution. China has a clause in their constitution that preserves religious liberty, the free exercise of religion. Frankly, the way it's written, it is actually written stronger than our own constitution. Does it mean anything? No. Nothing. Ours still means something, and you can make an impact, and you can ensure that it means something for the future generations. God bless you. Thank you for being here. Yeah.